is new is that we now have the technique.
Blog Talk Radio.
I was in the federal court. That thrown out and got a
thank you.
They say he wandered very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But very wise, so wise was he. Then one day, he passed my way. And while we stood and spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me. The greatest thing, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is to love and be loved in return.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
You're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing.
Sing along. voice and sing. Till I didn't ever ring. Ring with the harp of me. Oh, let our rejoices rise high. Burning the time. Loud as the orgia.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
What's going on, everybody, today? Out there in the blog talk radio land, out there in the internet world, the Facebook land, Twitter world. Today is an election to replace disgraced Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. here. So let me give you a brief view of what's going on. 12 minutes ago, they say Rahm is more powerful than Daley. When they say that 100% of the councilman votes for Rahm. They got Robin Kelly out to a big lead to replace Jesse Jackson. I might revisit that later on to see how that turns out. Ed Gardner, black contractors should get half of CPS schools contracting. I wonder if they listen to you, Ed. Election day bring pitiful voter turnout here in Illinois. I mean, it rained. I mean, you didn't have no debates. I mean, what election? They downplayed it so hard, it was a shame. Yeah. That's about that. I dig this, everybody. There's this wild song that's out. LL Cool J and this other guy. I can't think of this other person's name. Lord have mercy. His name eludes me right now. But anyway, I'm going to play this cut from this LL Cool J track that's driving everybody's insane right now. Everybody's tripping on this this one LL Cool J song. It's called Accidental Racist. Let me try to find out who is the person that's singing before I even bring it out for everybody consideration. Let me see. You jiggity. It's called Accidental Racist. And it's LL Cool J sung it. I had it lined up, but I'm going to get the name of the person before I even Brad Paisley. There you go, Brad Paisley. Accidental Racism by Brad Paisley. Now, is this a race relation song, or is this a parody? Or is this a joke? And we're going to be doing a look back on the last 2 days of Martin Luther King life also, but let me just deal with how a race relationship has took a turn for, I don't know, the worst of what you say. We got LL Cool J out here timing. It's called Accidental Racist. Let me know what y'all think about it.
Waiting on me. dress somehow is like the elephant in the corner of the south. And I just walked him right in the room. Just a proud rebel son with an old can of worms, looking like I got a lot to learn. But from my point of view, I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland, trying to understand what it's like not to be. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation didn't start this nation. We're still picking up the pieces, walking on eggshells, fighting over yesterday. And caught between Southern pride and Southern blame. Fixed the buildings, dried some tears. We're still sifting through the rubble after 150 years. I try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. It ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin. 'Cause I'm a white man living in the South.
Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me, I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle, dodging invisible white hoods. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag, and I think you wish I wasn't here. If you don't judge my durag, I won't judge your red flag. Dixon needs some fixing.
I hope you understand what this is all about.
Quite frankly, I'm a black Yankee, but I've been thinking about this lately.
I'm a son of the new South.
The past is the past, you feel me?
And I just want to make things right.
Let bygones be bygones.
All that's left. Southern pride.
R.I.P. Robert E. Lee. But I gotta thank Abraham Lincoln for freeing me. You know what I mean? It's real. It's real. It's true.
What the hell did I just listen to? What the hell did I just get through listening to? LL Cool J. Don't judge me by my gold chains and I will forget the iron chains. Don't judge me by my do-rag and I won't judge you by your red flag. LL Cool J. My God. Where you been, LL? What's wrong with you? You and Brad Paisley off into mom? I don't know. Let me find somebody's calling. Let me just lie. It is right here. Hello, caller. Hello? Caller?
First of all, I like country music, and it's no secret that I listen to country music. But what the hell was that? I'm insulted. And, oh, my God, I'm embarrassed. I can't believe that shit got recorded. I can't believe. Wait a minute. And I feel like the country singer was giving it all he had. And I cannot believe LL said, this is let bygones be bygones. Motherfucker, we talking about slavery. How the hell are you talking about let's let bygones be bygones? What the fuck? Excuse me. What is that? What is that?
I know what I just heard, and I do not know what I just heard. Did I hear what I just know? Lord have mercy. If you will overlook my do-rag, I will overlook that Confederate flag. Just because my pants are sagging don't mean I'm up to no good. Thank you, Abe Lincoln, for freeing me. It's more than a minute. I will play it back, man. It's a six-minute song of coonery. Not buffoonery. Coonery in LL Cool J. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed, LL. I'm really ashamed.
Can you actually say, if you forget about my gold chains,
If you overlook my gold chains, I'll forget about the iron chains.
That's not even comparable. That's not even comparable. We're talking about slavery.
Man, would you like to hear it again? No.
No.
Would you like to hear it again?
No, don't say it again. No, please don't do that to me. If you play it again,
No. What I'm saying is this. That's the talk of today.
That song should never be played again. That song should be banned from the radio.
Ebony is a song of racial diversity. It's reaching out to Americans now. The man is trying to reach out to Americans, I'm assuming, but.
Okay, I think it was. Listen, okay.
Is it a joke, or they really mean it?
Okay, let me step back now. Let's say if the intentions was to show some type of unity, let's just stop and look at the intentions. If the intentions was to unify, and I just think that it missed the mark because they were uneducated. And I think both of them need to get they need to understand what really happened with slavery. They need to understand what really the effects of the post-traumatic slavery syndrome. They need to have a deeper understanding that it's more than just, oh, man, I don't like you because you got a flag, and, oh, man, you got a do-rag. Oh, man, you wearing gold chains. Oh, man, you used to have me in slavery. I think it's got to be a little bit more education. But it might be, we may be stepping in the right direction. So, you know, we all American. You know,
is it that the white boy don't want the black man to look at him as racist? And the black man, I want the white boy looking man as a thug. Is that what they're trying to say? You think that they're trying to say?
Yeah, I think I ain't a racist. I'm not a thug. I don't know. But I do know this.
Why don't we take another sample of it and see if we can break it down again?
No, please. No, I don't want to break it down.
You're a country music fan, though.
I love country music. Garth Brooks, Shania Twain.
Dolly Parton. I know. The whole list of them. Merle Haggard. Right.
I don't want to hear that song again. I don't ever want to hear that song again because it hurts my ears and it hurts my heart because I, of course, grew up with LL Cool J. He was everybody's boyfriend. Who didn't have his poster up on the wall? Who didn't look at those sexy lips? Who don't watch him now on CSI? So it breaks my heart to hear him sound so uninformed and uneducated and just wrong about it. I mean, I'm not saying we're not trying to unify. I do believe in that. One God, one love, one destiny. I believe in that. But it just was misinformation, Jimmy. It's just misinformation. What do you think?
I can't rewrite history, baby. We can't rewrite history, baby. We can't rewrite history, baby. That's all I got to say.
Well, it's over with. We walking on eggshells, and we ain't got nothing to do with something that we got Jimmy. I'm sorry. It ain't that easy. And just to sing a little song and it's all over with? What about H.R. 40? Rap about that, LL.
Yeah.
You know? Rap about H.R. 40. Let's do some studies. Let's see what the effects of this. We study the effects of everything else. Let's see what the effects of this is. Let's see what the effects of this song is. I mean, you know, we study everything. So we can't just study what slavery has done to a set of people. We just got to let bygones be bygones. Forgive my gold chain. I forgive the lead chain.
Yes, it's embarrassing, but I'm going to play it again for those.
No, don't play it again.
Not right now. I'm playing a song that y'all missed it. Brad Paisley, LL Cool J. I'm gonna play it again. Before I take this break and go into some real LL, and then I'm gonna do a look back on the last 2 days of Martin Luther King's life, and we're gonna also check on this election cycle, see who's the winners, who's the losers, and see if I can catch somebody either Paul Williams, Lee Allen, or maybe the Democratic winner. We'll see about that. What's up with the rap, man? Let me go ahead and take care of this, because we're all tailbacking over here. LL, everybody, he needs love. Everybody, somebody, go give LL a hug right now, please.
When I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall, and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. For the first time in my life, I see I need love. There I was, giggling about the games that I had played with many hearts, and I'm not saying no names. Then the thought occurred, teardrops made my eyes blur, cause I said to myself, look what you've done to her. I can feel it inside, I can't explain how it feels. All I know is that I'm never dishing up the raw deal, playing make-believe, pretending that I'm true. Holding in my laugh as I say that I love you, saying I'm more, kissing you on the ear, whispering I love you and I'll always be here. Although I often reminisce, I can't believe that I found a desire for true love floating around inside my soul, because my soul is cold. One half of me deserves to be this way till I'm old, but the other half needs affection and joy, and the warmth that is created by a girl and a boy. I need love.
Watch the sunrise in your eyes. We're so in love when we hug.
never been there. Maybe this is an experience that me and you can share. Clean and unsoiled, yet sweaty and wet. I swear to you, this is something I'll never forget. I need love. I'm no longer a playboy on the run. I need something that's stronger. Friendship, trust, honor, respect, admiration. This whole experience has been such a revelation. It's taught me love and how to be a real man. To always be considerate and do all I can. Protect you, you're my lady and you mean so much. My body tingles all over from the slightest touch of your hand. And understand, I'll be frozen in time till we meet face to face and you tell me your mind. If I find you, girl, I swear I'll be a good man. I'm not gonna leave it in destiny's hands. I can't sit and wait for my princess to arrive. I gotta struggle and fight to keep my dream alive. I search the whole world for that special girl. When I finally find you, watch our love unfurl. I need love.
It up for LL Cool J, back in the day, Cut Creator, LL, E Love, then Bobcat came on the scene. Now we got Brad Paisley. Let's take a quick break and then let's come on to, then let's get into the last 2 days of Martin Luther King. A couple of speeches I'm going to play for you all. I'm going to get a lot of good response on those unheard of speeches that I've been playing of Martin Luther King, so I'm going ahead and do a couple for you in the next 3 minutes. 347-838-9825.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Thank you.
on King Day, people try to kind of box Dr. King in and try to make this sort of a holiday that's of primary importance to African Americans, but sort of secondary to the rest of the country. And his message was much broader. And one of those messages was a message of peace. You commented on that at Coretta Scott King's funeral, and you had a very clever way to do it, of course.
We know now there were no weapons of mass destruction over there. And we know that there are weapons of misdirection right down here. Millions without health insurance. Poverty abounds. For war, billions more. But no more for the poor.
Do you have any thoughts on how Dr. King, he would weigh in today on what's happening with the Iraqi war?
Well, I think the only thing we have to go by is his attitude toward the Vietnam War. I think that's the only fair way to look at it. And he constantly and consistently argued that war creates more problems than it can resolve, and that we are a violent nation, and that he said once that bombs exploding in Vietnam would explode in our economy in another generation. And he was exactly right, and we see it again today with the Iraqi war. They're exploding in our economy. We'll be exploding for generations to come. We're building up a horrendous debt for those yet to come because of our terrible experience in violating the autonomy of another country and seeking military solutions where there are none. So I don't think anybody can doubt what Martin's attitude would be toward this war.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. That time has come for us in relation to Vietnam. The truth of these words is beyond doubt, but the mission to which they call us is a most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. Nor does the human spirit move without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thought within one's own bosom and in the surrounding world. And some of us who have already begun to break the silence of the night have found that the calling to speak is often a vocation of agony, but we must speak. And we must rejoice as well, for surely this is the first time in our nation's history that a significant number of its religious leaders have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of a firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. Over the past 2 years, as I have moved to break the betrayal of my own silences and to speak from the burnings of my own heart, as I have called for radical departures from the destruction of Vietnam, many persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my path. Why are you speaking about the war, Dr. King? Why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. Aren't you hurting the cause of your people, they ask. And when I hear them, though I often understand the source of their concern, I'm nevertheless greatly saddened, for such questions mean that the inquirers have not really known me, my commitment or my calling. Indeed, their questions suggest that they do not know the world in which they live. I believe that the path from Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, the church in Montgomery, Alabama, where I began my pastorate, leads clearly to this sanctuary tonight. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. There were experiments, hopes, new beginnings. Then came the build-up in Vietnam, and I watched this program broken and eviscerated, as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor so long as adventures like Vietnam continued to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction tube. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and to attack it as such. It became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and to die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem. So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools. In 1957, when a group of us formed the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, we chose as our motto to save the soul of America. We were convinced that we could not limit our vision to certain rights for black people, but instead affirmed the conviction that America would never be free or saved from itself until the descendants of its slaves were loose completely from the shackles they still wear. In a way, we were agreeing with Langston Hughes, that black Bart of Harlem, who had written earlier, "Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be." Somehow this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as a child of God and brother to the suffering poor of Vietnam. I speak for those whose land is being laid waste, whose homes are being destroyed, whose culture is being subverted. I speak for the poor of America who are paying the double price of smashed hopes at home and death and corruption in Vietnam. I speak as a citizen of the world, for the world as it stands aghast at the path we have taken. I speak as one who loves America, to the leaders of our own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours. I am convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society, when machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. On the one hand, we are called to play the Good Samaritan on life's roadside, but that will be only an initial act. One day we must come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make that journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hand on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. A genuine revolution of values means, in the final analysis, that our loyalties must become ecumenical rather than sectional. Every nation must now develop an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole in order to preserve the best in thy individual societies. This call for a worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation is in reality a call for an all-embracing and unconditional love for all mankind. This oft-misinterpreted concept, so readily dismissed by the Nietzsches of the world as a weak and cowardly force, has now become an absolute necessity for the survival of man. When I speak of love, I'm not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I'm not speaking of that force which is just emotional bosh. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality. Let us hope that this spirit will become the order of the day. We can no longer afford to worship the god of hate, or bow before the altar of retaliation. The oceans of history are made turbulent by the ever-rising tides of hate. History is cluttered with the records of nations and individuals that pursued this self-defeating path of hate. We still have a choice today, nonviolent coexistence, a violent co-annihilation. We must move past indecision to action. We must find new ways to speak for peace in Vietnam and justice throughout the developing world, a world that borders on our doors. If we do not act, we shall surely be dragged down the long, dark, and shameful corridors of time, reserved for those who possess power without compassion, might without morality, and strength without sight. Now let us begin. Now let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter but beautiful struggle for a new world. Will our message be that the forces of American life militate against their rival as full men, and we send our deepest regrets? Or will there be another message of longing, of hope, of solidarity with their yearnings, of commitment to their cause, whatever the cost? The choice is ours, and if we will only make the right choice, we will be able to transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of peace. If we will make the right choice, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our world into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. If we will but make the right choice, we will be able to speed up the day all over America and all over the world when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
That was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Beyond Vietnam. He spoke at Riverside Church in New York on April 4, 1967. Exactly 1 year to the day after his speech, Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis. The Nobel Peace Prize winner was only 39 years old.
King continued his campaign for the poor. Sunday, March 31st, he spoke at the National Cathedral in Washington.
This is America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. The real question is whether we have the will.
On April 3rd, King returned to Memphis to prove that nonviolence could work. SCLC planned to challenge a court injunction blocking the next march. King hoped to avoid speaking at that night's rally and to rest instead at the Lorraine Motel.
There was a tornado warning in Memphis that evening. And it was raining, and wind were blowing everywhere. I believe a little tornado came to Memphis also. And he knew that there would not be a big crowd. And he said to me in the meeting with the staff, Ralph, I want you to go and speak this evening at the mass meeting.
And he didn't want to go to that meeting that night. He said he had sent Reverend Abernathy over, and he said, because I just didn't feel like going, but it's thundering and lightning here. We have a thunderstorm taking place. He said, but you know, Ralph has just called and said that I needed to come over. And so the people were waiting for me, and they really didn't want anybody else to speak but me. So he said, I guess I'll go on over there. I'll call you later. I said, I'll call you tomorrow night.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest for right. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life, longevity, has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Listening to Blog Talk Radio, the Jim Lee Underground Radio Network. We're taking a look back at the last 2 days of Martin Luther King. I've been having a lot of good letters sent in because they enjoyed the rare footage that we've been playing. So, and celebrating of the anniversary of his life and death and the effects that he had upon the earth, I decided to play features of Martin Luther King.
The next day I was in the federal court. We got the injunction thrown out and we got our permission to march, and I guess about 4:30 or 5 o'clock I came back to the Lorraine Motel, and I found Martin and A.D. and Ralph and everybody gathered there, and they'd been eating and had lunch and were talking and clowning. And when I came in, Martin just grabbed me and threw me down on the bed and started beating me with a pillow. I mean, he was like a big kid. He was fussing because I hadn't reported to him. And I tried to tell him I was on the witness stand, I'm here in the federal court. And he was, you know, just standing on the bed, swinging the pillow at me. And I'm trying to duck with him saying, "You have to let me know what's going on," you know. Finally, I snatched the pillow and started swinging back, and everybody, it was sort of like the after you make a touchdown, and everybody piles on everybody. It was people just started throwing pillows and piling on top of everybody and laughing and going on. And then he stopped and said, "Let's go, you know, we do a dinner at 6, and it was at that time about 6 o'clock. He went on up to his room to put on a shirt and tie. And Martin came out and asked, "You think I need a coat?" And we said, "Yeah, it's pretty cool, and you've had a cold. You better go back and get a coat." And he said, "I don't know whether I need a coat." You know, and the next thing we know, a shot. Well, I thought it was a car backfiring, a firecracker.
I jumped naturally. And I turned and saw only his feet. And I ran to him and took his head into my hands and began to pat his cheek and said, "Martin, this is Ralph. This is Ralph. This is Ralph. It will be all right. Everything is going to be all right. Everything is going to be all right, Martin."
An hour after he was shot, Martin Luther King Jr. died. That night, America's cities exploded.
It's too late now. We are ready to start. We're going to finish it up.
Americans should mourn Martin Luther King. I think they should mourn themselves.
347-838-9825 is the number. It looks like Robin Kelly, no surprise here, has won the election to replace disgraced Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. Let's see if we can deal with today's news, like the stabbing in Texas. Let's get some news on that, everybody. Okay.
And what have you learned about the suspect here? I mean, this is such a strange story.
Well, as you mentioned, it's a 21-year-old male who was a student here, we're told, at this Lone Star Community College campus, and he is has been taken into custody and is being questioned, and we presume at some point in this evening criminal charges will be filed against him, but exactly what those criminal charges will be is not exactly clear at this point. But this was a young man here at the campus that we were told by witnesses had to be subdued by three other students who had witnessed the stabbing happening, and three students jumped on top of him to subdue him and keep other people from being attacked. But when the call came in to authorities, the 911 call, it was described as a male on the loose around campus stabbing people, and that's what people rushed to the scene to get a better understanding of and to try to quell.
Yeah, they said this is gentleman. I thought that might be a little more story on it. He went around stabbing people.
Is 19 years old.
Here you go.
She's a freshman. Maya, first, how are you? Are you okay?
I'm good. I'm a little shaken up about what happened, but I'm okay now. I'm at home and I'm good.
You are home. You are good. Can I ask you how did you get off campus? Was it a process?
Well, I was in class and students were talking about how a lot of kids got stabbed, and we got out of the classroom and everybody was out, like right in front of my classroom, like bleeding on the neck and on the ears, and this girl, it seemed like she was bleeding like close to her mouth.
What?
It was really scary, and it was really scary.
Of course it was scary. We're looking at some of the pictures, I think, that you snapped. It looks like some law enforcement,
yeah.
Maybe paramedics. Can you walk me through what we're looking at?
Yeah, that girl right there is the one that I think got stabbed near her mouth. She was covering up her mouth the whole time. And the other girl laying on the floor, she was stabbed, like, on the neck. She had blood on her phone, around her chest and neck area. Hmm. It wasn't a law, but there was some blood.
Let me get a little bit more information on there for y'all. I'm trying to get all the information I can. Here's another one.
Anderson Cooper, 360.
Off Anderson Cooper, as you can see.
I went inside, and there's another girl that had the stab wound in her neck. There's blood all over the stairs, and ran upstairs and looked around, and I couldn't see anybody. But then I saw people on the hallway, so I knew it was safe. So I ran over there. Whenever I arrived, there was another kid with a slice on the back of his head. And I asked, where is he at? What's he look like? They didn't know also. Then I kept going asking, and I saw this other gentleman. He's right there. And he was literally downstairs to where you could see him. So I took off back to the stairwell, ran downstairs, and ran outside. And he was on the other side of the bridge, and other security guards were running after him and everything. And I was just running after him. I thought they were going to tell me to stop and not get involved, but I just kept running. And pretty soon I was out front, but there's these other three kids next to me, three or four kids, that I wasn't going to be alone with. Like, I wasn't going by myself. We ran, and the kid looked behind. We're about 100 feet away, and he darts into the first building he sees. And there's three different ways you can go. He can go straight and go to the lab right here or upstairs. And he went straight and made a left after the vending machines to go out the doors. Asked people where he was. The girl pointed us in that direction. We ran outside and saw him. And we just took off running after him. One kid got to him and grabbed him by his backpack, turned him around. And another kid named James actually grabbed his arm and pushed him down. And I wouldn't push him down. I'm just right there just, why did you do this? Why? And I'm just screaming with anger. Why would you do this to people? Why?
Did he
didn't say anything except for, the only thing he said was, give me my my hearing aid. And that's when I realized he couldn't understand me, but he put his hands up right away and said, I give up. That's
Were you
why
scared
I didn't
all?
Hit him, because he said he'd get...
Because, I mean, it's amazing that, you ran past the security guards, you tackled this guy with your friends.
Well, these weren't my friends. These are the other people that have good hearts and just want to take care of, like, of some innocent people just getting stabbed in the face. Like, that's a girl that prized in possession to her is her face, her natural beauty. And he took that from him. And these guys wanted to catch him also. But I wasn't scared because it was a stab wound. He said he had a knife. And that's a way fairer battle than a gun. So if he had a knife, that means he was willing to fight. But you can always disarm someone. But no one wanted to go inside. Everyone kept running out from where I was at. But I'm a curious person. Went upstairs and found out and ran back downstairs. And thank God I've been working out a little bit. So I had the energy to catch up to him. And then we got him on the ground, and the security guards came and handcuffed him. And that's when I took that picture. And just people just saying, like, I did it by myself. I didn't do it myself. Eric Bertrand helped out. This kid named James, he also helped out. And another gentleman, I didn't get his name, but I want to thank them also for their help. And
last one. I'm just trying to give y'all a little update on what transpired today on a small campus in Texas where this guy went on this mad rampage. A stabbing rampage where he stabbed, I guess, about, they say, 14 people. Two people in critical condition, but 12 are right, but 14, not so fine. But we will see how everything, I guess, played itself out today. I know y'all, I'm having a little, it's the second one that happened. No. We ran that one already. Well, okay, well, I don't know. We're running from that point on. I'm having a little hard time, so I'm going to go ahead and just go ahead and skip it. So that's what's going on today in, I guess, the world of crazies. The world is going crazy, everybody. Now, they say the man, I was trying to find out why, trying to find the reasons why he did it, but I couldn't get that uploaded properly. I'm glad y'all enjoyed my little King excerpts that I've been playing. You know, that is great. I'm going to play some more, but, you know, I might just dedicate one whole day to playing all King. I know you don't like this, Ebony, but let me go back to this controversial song that was played today by LL Cool J and Brad Paisley. Let me know what y'all think about this cut. You know, is it a parody or is it a real song? Are LL Cool J and Brad Paisley trying to set some off, or are they really mean what they're trying to say? Flag on my chest somehow's like the elephant in the
corner of the silence. And I just walked him right in the room. Just a proud rebel son with an old can of worms. Looking like I got a lot to learn. But from my point of view, I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland, trying to understand what it's like not to be. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation didn't start this nation. We're still picking up the pieces, walking on eggshells, fighting over yesterday. And caught between Southern pride and Southern blame. Fixed the buildings, dried some tears. We're still sifting through the rubble after 150 years. I'll try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. It ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin. Cause I'm a white man living in the South. Just like you, I'm more than what you see. I'm proud of where I'm from, not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation didn't start in the nation. We're still paying for the mistakes that a bunch of folks made long before we came. And caught somewhere between Southern pride and Southern blame.
Dear Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me. I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle dodging invisible white hood. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag and I think you wish I wasn't here. If you don't judge my new rag, I won't judge your red flag. Dixon needs some
fixing. I hope you understand what this is all about.
Quite frankly, I'm a black Yankee, but I've been thinking about this lately.
I'm a son of the new South.
The past is the past, you feel me?
And I just want to make things right.
Let bygones be bygones.
All that's left. Southern pride.
R.I.P. Robert E. Lee. But I gotta thank Abraham Lincoln for freeing me. You know what I mean? It's real. It's real. It's true.
Does your insurance company work for you?
Hi, this is Ken Robinson, President and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owners policies, general contractors liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crack.
Hello?
She had no cord, she had no remote. She really didn't know what the hell she had. I don't sell something that somebody else has to
pay. Hey, Doug, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Jay Lee?
I'm
Church in the building, Jay Church in the house. Yeah, your man didn't make it out today. They got 62% of votes casting in already on the 60%, and they just totaled. They said she won already. What's your take on how it went down? What's your take on how it went down?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I pretty much had a clear state of mind that Miss Kelly had the proper backing to take the whole thing. And I'm like I told you from the day one, I support her to the fullest. But my personal bond lied with Mr. Jones, and I wanted him to, you know, do as best as he could in politics. So that's who I supported. That's who got my vote. But I actually end up working polls for the Democratic Party. But Mr. Jones did get my vote, so...
Yeah, why you working the polls? What was the turnout like?
I'm going to keep it real. I'm shocked, man. I'm appalled. It was such a slow turnout, the polls I worked, and they placed me in the suburbs, so I wasn't able to work the city how I wanted to, where I have my prowess at, but they put me in the suburbs, man. It was saddening how slow it was at these polls just for this election, man.
Where did they have you at?
I believe I was on in the 159th. I was in the Harvey area. I don't know. Matter of fact, it was District 2. I was in District 2.
Harvey, though, so how many people came out? What, under 100, over 100, would you say?
I'm going to say approximately, I definitely wouldn't count them at the door, but I did pass out literature to most people going there. I'm going to say it was approximately about a 125 people. I can't even say exactly the exact area I was in, but it wasn't a turnout I expected for such a important seat in Congress, you know.
Yeah, it's an important seat in Congress.
So
the weather had anything to do with it?
The weather, I'm not going to blame it on the weather, man. I don't care if the election was in the wintertime. If you want your voice to be heard, you got to get out there and punch the right the candidate that's going to represent your voice the right way. And today wasn't a bad day at all for this being Chicago, no snow on the ground, so people just wasn't interested as they should have been.
Do you feel that lack of media attention to this race,
I definitely believe that they set it up for whoever won the primary to go ahead and sweep the whole thing, because it wasn't properly promoted. It wasn't, you know, highly publicized that today was even a voting day. Most people that I saw had no problem going to vote. They just didn't know what they were voting for today or what was going on. You know, once I spoke to them and told them the importance of it, they went straight in and voted, you know. But if we went out there to talk to them, they would have walked right past all the voting polls from what I see.
Wow, so... And none of Robin Kelly money onto the people vote out. Basically, she pocketed the congressman money, influenced the primary election.
I definitely do believe that her vast promotion definitely swept the primary for her. And we all know that once you get in the later rounds, you're either going to go Republican or Democrat, not too many independents are winning elections, you know. But I did, like I say, wish for the best for my candidate. I wish I could have pushed a little harder for him. You know, today I did what I did to get him on the ballot. I did what I did to keep him relevant. But on the day of, you know, an important day, I wasn't able to push for him like I wanted to because, you know, I was called by so many people to work the polls. I had to be neutral at the polls. I couldn't pass out Mr. Jones' literature, and I'm telling people just to go vote for their how they feel like voting.
I'm quite sure my listener is aware of that. Now, your man ran in the Green Party, and it seems that he had more credentials than the Republican candidate, but yet the light was on the Republican candidate. Do you think the Green Party or even an independent party has a chance to make a dent in Black Chicago? What's your take on it?
Without a doubt, I think that the Green Party has a great candidate. He's a great spokesperson and face for the party, and I believe he can do some great things, but I'm going to be honest with you. You know, when you're dealing with politics, man, you can't really win the election without the proper promotion, so it's going to always cost money to make money. You know, like as much as I did for Mr. Jones, that was out of the kindness of my heart. If I had a little more finances, it could have been 20 more people on the streets pushing for him. If I could have paid my workers and the people that usually push for me, but I had to do what I did on my own because I was working out of, you know, out of love and loyalty. So it wasn't a big payday for me, but that's just what we have to do.
It really shouldn't be about payday. It should be if they believe in that person, they'll get that back. But the question I was leaning toward was a Green Party candidate. Now, do you think Illinois would elect a Green Party candidate, any position, not, let's say, Congress, I mean, let's say alderman, you know?
I believe an alderman is more attainable. I believe an alderman position or another type of position is more attainable. Congress is a very big position to fill, a wide demographic, as I found out today. You know, I was as far as I was in the 150s, they were still aware of Mrs. Kelly's push. You know, I don't think that Mr. Jones' push reached as wide as the South Suburbs. It was a city push, but, you know, the proper promotion, like I said, and you'll take it home and take money to bring it home.
Just take money to bring it home. Now, the organization that you had, you said you that the political organization work, do they freelance or do they work for the candidates? Are they just freelance individual operations?
Yeah, us at the Just Us Foundation, like I said, I work for approximately like 20 candidates during the whole stretch of this last prior two elections. You know, the Democratic Republican campaign, Obama and I forget Mitt Romney, as well as this here Jesse Jackson seat. We got like 20 candidates on the ballot, so we don't discriminate. We work for whoever needs to get on the ballot, and if you keep us in consideration to work your campaign after we get you on the ballot, we'll do that also.
Yeah, where is your foundation located?
Actually, like I said, we try not to depict ourselves on just a southeast west side basis. We travel the whole parameters of Chicago as of right now. We work for candidates out west, Mr. Lance Tyson and Derek Smith. We met a lot of candidates out west. We worked for a lot of people southeast, south suburbs, you know, Mayor Kellogg, south suburban mayor. We work for everybody.
Yeah, so how long have you been in politics?
This was my first, this past election was my first year actually working, getting people on the ballot and things of that sort. I went out and voted in 08, of course, for Obama. That was like one of my first years really caring about the vote. You know, Bill Clinton was a great president to me, but Obama was my first year really getting involved in 08. And ever since then, I've been an activist trying to better my life and get on the righteous path. And I just got into politics this year, really. This second term was my first run at the political realm.
Well, let me ask you this question. What issues do you feel are dear to you that Congressman Kelly or Rush or this, what issues do you feel that they should address that are close to you? And you asked that, what issues are close that you, what is your point issues and what issues are close to you?
Without a doubt, I believe the issue closest to my neighborhood is really, you know, of course, the children of our future. So I'm very excited about the Safe Passage program, getting these kids to and from school safely. And education is the key. If we can properly educate our children and let them know that there's bigger things out here than sports and just music, you know, they can actually be a politician or a neighborhood representative or go to college and get their education. That's the biggest key right now for Chicago. These kids need to be properly educated.
The education is one of the top issues that you feel close in.
Without a doubt. As well as, and I'm going to keep it honest, just to be honest, like I said, I can only tell you about my situation. You know, after education, my biggest issue is probably police brutality, because I feel like even though these guys are paid to uphold the law, it's still your job. Like, you can't, you're not above the law just because you, you know, bear your uniform and your job is to uphold the law. They got to treat citizens with respect because the laws is to free us, not to enslave us. So those are my two topics: wrongful incarceration, police brutality, education. That's what I touch most in my communities.
Do you think Robin Kelly addressed those issues during either campaign, the primary or this general?
I think Ms. Kelly is a good candidate. I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't too in tune to her race because I was more occupied on my candidate. I wasn't watching
the news. I know you tunnel mind and tunnel vision.
Right.
All I'm saying, I'm not trying to have you shoot this good lady down either. Because I feel that there's going to be enough people that's ready to gun after already because guess what? The election for Congress starts today. I'm saying the election for Congress starts today.
Yes,
the next primary is March 24th, and that's a couple of hundred days away. Proceed again. So the primary starts again today, the real election, for all elections, for governors, for statewide elections, for a couple of few county elections, and congressional seats. State seats might be up, but I think all the state rep seats up too. Point being is the election starts today, right
yes,
now,
sir.
So... I'm not saying to shoot her down or anything. What I'm saying is the issues that you say are dear to you. I didn't watch the election that, you know, I didn't pay attention to it because I know it was a sham setup. But I would like individual, honestly, do you feel that Robert Kelly addressed those issues which you are talking about at all during the campaign?
I actually didn't hear her touch too many topics about police brutality and wrongful incarceration, but I do believe that she's going to do the best she can to upgrade the educational system in the Southeast region, whatever realm she'll be running. And
how do
I think
you feel
she's
that?
A good candidate.
How do you feel that?
I mean, she just did a great job of promoting herself to the districts of winning the election. I'm hoping that she didn't just win off of propaganda. I believe that she has the backing.
That you was in the election before your boy got in. Let's see. So the football player, he could have been a better candidate than Robin Kelly. As a matter of fact, Tony Krawinkle didn't even endorse Robin Kelly, and she worked for him. It seemed like a lot of people was not leaning toward Robin Kelly until... gave her $2 million. This is my problem, Robin. This is my problem, Robin Kelly, and this is why I'm saying I want you to pay attention to this, and all the listeners to pay attention to this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And right now, and so I'm calling her a liar. I want to say that I do not know this man who gave me $2 million. I know this man. That's a lie. To say that the $2 million did not affect the election, it was a lie. I mean, be honest. It doesn't make no difference that he gave you the money or not. Nobody gives a stranger $2 million. You understand what I'm saying? No, I mean, you might give $50 in your campaign, $100, $1,000 here, $1,000 there that you can write off, whatever. No one gives away $2 million without saying, let me talk to this person I'm about to give this money to.
Right. I hear that, sir. That's the truth. I understand that. I think Mr. Harris would have been a prime candidate to run against anybody because from my experience working with Mr. Harris, he has the South Suburbs pretty much well occupied and maintained. So if you could spread him through the city, you know, I think that would have been a very nice push, and I think he had a chance of winning. But once he backed Ms. Kelly, you know, I kind of had an understanding that, because I was working for Mr. Harris when he backed Ms. Kelly, I had an understanding that she was in a good position because I thought he was in a good position to win. So if it's her and him, I knew it was a problem. Now when Mr. Emanuel backs her, Obama backs her, it's pretty much nipped in the bud she was going to win. So she did her thing. I'm proud of her.
If they had to back her because she was a Democratic candidate, what are they going to do? Go for Republican, go for independent? I mean, that's how the game works. But the point I'm coming at saying this is that all she talked about was gun control. There's more issues than gun control is what I was coming at. The issue I was looking at was that honesty is the best policy. And for you to even up to the day that you get inaugurated for your speech, $2 million did not have nothing to do with it. Everyone knows that $2 million on TV, got you on radio, you outspent everybody. If you didn't have that money, she really wouldn't have won. And that's the truth, and that's any pundit, white, black, Puerto Rican, everybody would say the same deal. But not to acknowledge it shows me that, you know, you really are not just and right. I mean,
everybody, it's a known fact that she came up with a beautiful, you know, political push that helped her get where she's going on a promo run. But like I said,
the only push she got was Bloomberg gave her $2 million and they start paying everybody to get out the race. And then he tried it. He could have won. They found the gun on him. I mean, things are happening around to make her the viable candidate. But again, she has now to maintain that spot because the election has just begun. And now everything that she does from this point on, criticized and scrutinized because this election was nothing but election to hold Jesse's spot until March.
Right.
It was not to be, I'm a congressman. She won the election as an interim coach. You know, she's got the contract. You know, until the season is over, then the people got to know they're going to hire the coach again or go in another direction. Depends how she managed the team. But, you know, sometimes people are not satisfied with when the coach gets fired. They bring the assistant coach in. He might do a good job with that person. And that's who she is. She's like an interim coach. And that's what that was not talked about. And I think this election's coming up that's going to be what the governor's race is going to be heavily promoted. And then we'll see what the city has to say about it because she's not a city person and the city wants a city congressman no matter what they say.
Without a doubt. I think a congressman should be from the city of Chicago. I think all of our upper echelon politicians should have an understanding of the city they represent. But as of right now, it looks like every election going to the highest bidder. So I'm just going with the punches, man.
As a voter, and as a black voter, how do you take your political allegiance aside, but as a black voter, how do you feel? After the primary, it's over. Money can buy the election. And issues like education, police brutality, or how about this? Here I say, jobs are not being addressed. Again, I said again, jobs. She never said nothing about jobs.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm going to be honest, man. Like I said, she just got in today, so I'm going to have to see what type of job she do generate. Like, but I do believe that we're going to be on the uprise. We just went through. If they tell you it's a recession, you better believe we're in a depression. So they just told us we're in a recession. We're working our way out. I believe America's going to be on the uprise these next 3 years anyway because I'm impressed with the job that our president is doing. So I'm just going to see how this all play out.
So you're Democratic person, ain't going to jump on Obama right now because blacks are hiding. And a lot of stuff is going on, and blacks ain't got no
job. Don't jump on the bus, please.
I'm not going to go that route, cause, you know, I ain't going to go that route. I ain't going to put you on the front, but I'm going to say this. I want to get this question to you right here.
Yes, sir.
Are you satisfied as an Illinoisan, I-L-L-I-N-I, with Chicago, Cook County, Illinois, are you satisfied with what the leaders are doing for you right now? Are you satisfied with how's everything going? We have a new mayor, we got a new governor, we got new aldermen, we got new everybody. Are you satisfied with the direction that Chicago is heading in with this Democratic leadership?
I'm going to be honest with you. I can't say that I'm nowhere near satisfied with the state that we're in. You know, but
Why is that?
I just feel like we could come up with better candidates as well as I don't think that no vote is ever unified. So nobody's never really happy because the votes are always split up. The candidate that wins is the candidate that best promotes himself. So no one has a voice really. It's still money talking. Money is doing the talking and all the righteous voices are being muted. So It's really no way around it. It's money been talking since the beginning of the time, and that's probably how it's going to be, I guess.
Do you feel that people will be dissatisfied no matter what? Let me get like, because, you know, your boy ain't no Democrat off top. Everybody come on my show, no, I ain't Democrat. You know, I'm riding red. But I'm going to be a GOP.
I know.
project. Now, Dick, the point I'm coming at is saying this, because I, you know, after Obama got elected, no doubt, when people listen to my show, I became a Republican after Obama got elected. It had nothing to do with Obama because I was with Obama while everybody was with Hillary Clinton. Matter of fact, I was with Obama while everybody was with the white guy before he became senator. I was with Obama from day one.
Wow.
In fact, we go back. So my problem with Obama is HR separation, slaves, a lot of black issues that he could have done, but I don't see him doing it. But that's a ballgame. But my point is, look at, we look at the Democratic, let me give you an example in the 5 minutes I got. If you and your lady and your babies want to go hang out on a Friday or a Saturday afternoon, you want to go to the beach, how much it going to cost you to go to the beach? God damn it, it's going to cost $25 for gas in the car. God dang it, drive to the beach. What you got to do? You got to put $15 or $10 in the meter to sit up there for a couple of hours. Cost too much money for a family to even get down in the city of Chicago. It costs more money to, it's cheaper to buy cigarettes now. I'm just saying. They got people going to the loose cigar man like he's a drug man. I mean, look at the direction of the city that the city is taking, but it's all Democratic rules, and everybody just say, keep it real. We going Democratic all day long, but not realizing where your pocket's at. I mean, look at the people on welfare. They should just get cut. People losing less money off their check. All right, that's Obama. Right? What's going on? Ask people who got Social Security disability. They ain't got a raise yet. I mean, that's all Obama, but we can be all real. Look at Detroit. They shutting down Detroit, but they all vote for Obama. All that money went to auto. I mean, we can go all day long. Point I'm saying is this. Look around you. And if around you ain't better, it's because the people you hang around with ain't better. And cats is keeping you down. Them cats got to go. Just because the motherfuckers are Democrat, niggas don't hold the Democratic Party nothing. Because they close your fucking schools in your fucking face like, what up? They make your cigarettes turn to crack on you. You know what I'm saying? You can't even go to church. I put money in the meter. You can't go to the beach. You can't go to the park. You can't go nowhere. You can't even get on a bus no more here in Chicago. But everybody loves the Democrats. You feel what I'm saying? But you want to keep going? And look at what's going on around them. To you. If you want to have a future, man, absorb what's going around with you, man. Don't be no robot. You know what I'm saying? Straight get up auto-tune. Sing your own songs.
Man, I hear that.
Sing your own song. But anyway, I'm going to let you go on and close it out. Why don't you go on and say goodbye to all your fans since I got you on my last my lecture night show, and we can go from that point on.
Without a doubt. I just want to say that, man, I got so much love and respect for Chicago as a city, man, and I think that if we just respect ourselves and choose our voices wisely. You can't just elect a person because they're the popular name, man. You choose your voices wisely, get them in office, get more in tune to your politics, and I think it'll be a lot better place here in Chicago. You know, it lies within the politicians and the activists. That's who's going to set the tone for the future.
Well, that's how we're going to do it. That's the last word from my man, JC, a.k.a. J Church in the building. He has a great future. Soon as he gets politics right and realize Democrats ain't going to treat him right, we're going to get my man right in a second. Keep it real, man. Just keep it real, and may your Most High be with you. This is Union Underground Radio. It's what's going on Wednesday tomorrow. We're getting new music Thursday. May your God be with you. Good night, everybody. I'll see you later, JC.
Yes, sir. Lord, JC. Amen.
Concerned but not involved with decisions that are made by